There's always someone or something in life that hangs around like a peculiar odour after a heavy session of colonic irrigation. Well, the someone who drifted into the gaping nostrils of my early life was good old madcap Aunt Tilda. But it's not until one comes to reappraise one's own damaged personal life that one realises that things could have panned out a whole lot worse. She was an unwavering wearer of purple, po-faced and heavily powdered, whose chin aimed slightly high as if in search of some imaginary spotlight. Like an over-the-hill movie star still wearing her 40s tweed outfits, she waited for but never reclaimed those heady green Humber snipe days with Uncle Ted again. A puffer of pretentious Demoria's cigarettes inhaled frivolously through a felt silver holder, she was the malevolent mama with a facial tick that kept to no particular time. She travelled to us by bus, habitually. Weekly, in fact. We never did take to each other. She'd isolate me with using them in a miscellany of names in a manner surpassed only by Cookie, the annoying kid on 77 Sunset Strip. But that incomparable parlance of hers was fascinating. Unfortunately, she couldn't stomach me anywhere near her. I'd smile at her with my well-practiced Burt Lancaster grin. I was proud of my impersonation, but she took it as a grimace, a challenge, an insult of some kind. She'd suddenly retort and call me a bloody little shit. But was it her, though? Our dearest, dearest Tilda, who unintentionally turned me on to the beat writers. Kerouac, Ginsberg, Ferlinghetti, Snyder, Corso, and Burroughs. To a new language where self-expression and immediacy took precedence over syntax and other poetic trickery. Was it her who, in her own phobic way, was way out too? Was she my cryptic catalyst? She who tried to converse in a genteel accent? She'd say embarrassing things like, slash instead of slice, lattice instead of lettuce, butcher instead of butcher, lashance instead of license, and so on. I would frequently suppress a good belly laugh when sitting at the dinner table with her. My mother might ask Tilda if she'd like more meat. Tilda would reply, "Oh, just have a thin slash, Elsie." And I'd visualize her leaping out of her chair, hoisting up her substantial Harris tweed skirt together with a hodgepodge of gaudy petticoats, then yanking down a pair of heavy-duty magnolia knickers to a point where gravity took over and it fall loosely around her ankles with a dull flop. Then, in front of the whole family, leaning slightly forward and adopting a very low crouching attitude, she'd start pissing with all firing force onto the now slightly warped pine dinner table. The loud splashing sound stirring the budgie into life. "You bloody fool, you bloody fool!" It would be shrieking as it pummeled its short beak against a splintering cuttlefish wedged firmly between the bars of a swaying cage, its green feathery head pulsing in time with Louis Prima's Buonasera blasting out on the crackling radio. Yes, I could picture us all sitting there draped in a concentrated cloud of pungent steam, coughing and wheezing, the budgie still spewing out the foulest of language from its limited lexicon, and our black cocker spaniel stretched out under the now U-shaped table, soaking wet and looking bewildered as it witnessed the first signs of human regression. I'd giggle uncontrollably, holding on to myself tightly to stop a stream of piss from running down my own skinny legs. My mother would then intervene, knowing full well what the situation was. As she passed more roast potatoes to Tilda, the radio DJ would say, "And now we have Love for Sale by Mr. Julian Cannonball Adderley."